Hi, this is Russ Taft.
Hi, this is John Olifanti.
Hi, this is John Schlippen-Petra.
Hi, this is Kim Boyce.
Hey, everybody, Stephen Curtis Chapman here, and you are listening to Jesus Freaks Final to Digital.
Hi, I'm Jason Huddle, host of Jesus Freaks Final to Digital. Before we get into this week's program, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for downloading this episode and giving us a listen. If you really like what you hear, we'd love to have your support. How can you do that, you say? Well, I'm glad you asked. Simply visit patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast and become a monthly sponsor. Now, you can do that for as little as two measly dollars per month, or you can go higher and get special perks, like advance access to episodes when available, the opportunity to submit questions I will ask our artists on future episodes, and even your very own Jesus Freaks t-shirt. Again, that's patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And hey, if you'd like your business or organization to become a sponsor of this program, let us know by visiting our website, JesusFreaksPodcast.com, and click on the Become a Sponsor link at the bottom of the page. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's get on with the show.
Hey, this is Jamie Rowe from Guardian, and you're listening to Jesus Freaks, Vinyl to Digital.
One of the most prolific and iconic guitarists in the Christian metal world, it's Rex Carroll. Best known for his role as the lead guitarist of White Cross, Rex has always felt the call of God on his life.
The whole totality of God is pretty overwhelming. I've sensed many times his presence working behind the scenes in my life, moving me in different directions where he wants me to go.
But just because he was in the Christian music industry didn't mean there was no pressure to sell records.
They came in the studio every day. Well, we're expecting this to sell about 2 million copies. That's what our manager would say every day. And I was like, oh, no pressure.
In part one of this two-part episode, Rex talks about his early career, how he knew the call of God on his life, and the beginnings of a little band called White Cross. That's all coming up right now on Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a preferred podcast of Way FM and part of the New Release Today podcast network. I'm your host, Jason Huddle. Thrilled to welcome on to the program today one of Christian rock's best ever guitarists. And that's an understatement. That really doesn't even skim the surface of how talented this gentleman is. Rex Carroll from White Cross. Thank you so much for being on the program this week.
Well, hi, Jason. How's it going? Glad to be here.
Oh, man, we are doing great. We are so thrilled to have you on. I have been a White Cross. I'm sorry if I'm a little fanboy-y, because I try not to be, but man, some artists just, I've been listening to your solos, and I'm a keyboardist myself. I play the keyboard, but I've always wanted to play the guitar like you can shred, man. You are just incredible. How long have you been playing guitar?
Way too long. I started on piano when I was 5, and then in third grade, they handed out the instruments for the orchestra. So I tried a violin. I liked it. I started playing the violin. And then I was collecting drums on the side because I really loved Ringo Starr. I wanted to be Ringo when I was a kid. And then my mom got me a guitar for my 10th birthday. And there was like a book that came with it. And I already kind of knew how to read from piano lessons and violin lessons. So then I played, I just started playing the guitar, and I never looked back. And then I got some lessons on the guitar, and I'm grateful for that. Taught me things about music theory. And then I just, that was my whole career in growing up, just hanging around the band room and the orchestra room. And you know, and then I got to be in the marching band too at school. Because they always needed us somebody to carry an instrument for the football games. Whoever was out sick, they handed me the instrument. So I did some of that too. So that was my life growing up, was being in bands and playing with
band
guys.
Geek. I love it. Yeah,
yeah. And you know, some of the guys that I went to school with have gone on and done amazing things in their careers. So there's something in the water there.
Now, where are you from originally?
Well, I originally from Cincinnati, and I grew up near Chicago. And like I said, the school I went to had some really talented individuals that ended up going on and having like great music careers of their own. So, you know, I'm just trying to keep up and do my part. When I was 17, I dedicated my life to Christ. And I had grown up in a Christian home, you know, my mom especially took me to church, and I liked going to church with my mom. So I never had a, I don't know what you would call like a conversion experience moment. That was not me. I grew up, I cannot ever recall a time in my life where I was like against the Lord or anything like that. But when I was 17, it became real to me, and I prayed a sinner's prayer, and I understood what I was doing, and I meant what I said, and so on. And so I really took it for myself at that point. And then after a couple of years, I got into a forerunner Christian rock band on campus at my university. And that was awesome. We went to all the concerts. We saw Phil Kagi. We saw Randy Stonehill when he was like drawing big crowds around Chicago, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people at a time. And
Randy's been a guest on our show. So yeah, we love Randy.
Oh yeah, he's great. And then, I got to see Keith Green.
Oh my goodness.
In Rockford, Illinois. Yeah. We went out and we saw that. And, Second Chapter of Acts, I went to their concert. And, and then later on, when we got out performing, then I got to meet some really nice people. I met Amy Grant. She was awesome. We sat and just chatted for like 30 minutes, and it was great. And I met Nancy Honeytree, and you know, it's a lot of great people out there in the especially from the early days of Christian music.
So let me back up just a second, because I love that. There's something to be said for, you know, lots of people have these testimonies. I was, you know, we had people on this show that, you know, they were selling drugs the day they got saved.
No, that was not me.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. That's awesome that you have a different testimony. But there is a time when, and I was just talking to this with my wife today, there's a time when your faith becomes your faith and not your parents' faith. Like yes. Even people that grew up in the church, there's a day that it happens where you believe what you believe. You don't just believe it because of your parents. And so I guess my question is, you know, on that day when you were 17, was there something that happened that just clicked, or did you just decide it was time to go full force, start serving the Lord?
Well, you know, I read a book by Hal Lindsey called The Late Great Planet Earth. Yeah. And that book, it just kind of scared the hell out of me. Literally, it showed me a picture of, oh, what is eternity without Christ? What is that actually going to be like? I had never really read the book of Revelations before. And as we say in Christian circles, the Holy Spirit is the hound of heaven. You know, C.S. Lewis talked about that. If God is after you, if he's pursuing you, he wants to reach you in whatever way he can reach you. So yeah, I was a young man, that was kind of a wake up call for me.
Yeah.
So I read that book, and then I started reading the book of Revelations, which I had never read before. You know, I saw this other side of, you know, it's like I grew up in going to church with my mom, and God is love, and Jesus came to teach us how to love each other and all this nice stuff. But I had never seen the flip side of a righteous and holy fire that is coming to cleanse the earth. You know, I'd never seen that side of God. It's a big God, and there's a lot to God that we need. The whole totality of God is pretty overwhelming. So that was just a thing that moved me at the time, and then ever since then, I have sensed many times his presence working behind the scenes in my life, moving me in different directions where he wants me to go.
That's awesome. Now, you were a talented musician at 17 already, I'm sure. But, you know, there are lots of talented musicians at 17 when they get saved. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going into the Christian music industry. What was the defining moment, or was there a defining moment where you felt like, okay, I'm called to do this. This is what I'm going to do with my life.
Well, you know, I can tell you when I was 15, the highlight of my week outside of going to my guitar lesson, that was the biggest highlight. I used to watch this TV show called In Concert. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And some of the older folks will. And then there was another show called Don Kirshner's Rock Concert. So these were like two TV shows. Hey, there's no internet. You know, there's no right. YouTube. Right. You're buying these record albums and you're listening to them. And I'm just listening to music all day, get my homework done so I can go get lost in the stereo system. And you're just imagining things in your head as a kid, like, what do they look like? And you're like just studying the pictures on the backs of the albums. So when you get to see it on a TV show, I mean, that was awesome. So I was watching Deep Purple performing at the California Jam. And right in the moment when Ritchie Blackmore got angry with the camera and he took his guitar and he smashed it right into the camera, and it was right on the TV and the guitar is like coming towards you as the viewer, and it knocked out the camera and then it cut to a different camera angle. And I was like freaked out. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I was like, at that moment, I was like, I want to be the guy who gets to do that. So that was it. After that, it was like, okay, that's it for me. And then, of course, you know, becoming, taking my Christian faith seriously and then starting to work that out. There's a lot of things in it. It's always a tightrope that you're always walking as, because you're always involved in the music business to one degree or another, in Christian music business, secular music business, whatever. It's, you know, you're interacting with record companies, promoters, concert venues, booking agents, all that, you know, all this stuff that goes with the music business. And so you're always dealing with that. So figuring out your Christian walk in the music industry is something that you don't figure it out one time and then you just go from there. You're always having to keep yourself in check and keeping everything in prayer and, you know, asking for God's leading in every decision in life. When I was on campus at Northern Illinois University, then the Resurrection Band came out and played a concert at our school. And I had this little Christian group that I was in, and we were the opening act. And if you ever talk to Glenn Kaiser, just ask him about the squirrely. Well, yeah. Yeah, ask him about the squirrely kid with the afro haircut who just was, you know, crazy on the guitar. I remember that night. That was like, and that was awesome for me because I saw Resurrection Band and I thought, oh, here is somebody who's modeling for me the idea that you can be a Christian and you can still be a rock musician. And, yeah. And this is a template. This is one template of how you can merge the two things together. And if this is your calling, which it was for me, here's a model of somebody who's doing it. And that was awesome.
Unapologetically, I might add. I mean, he was unapologetic.
Well, yeah, you know, Glenn, you know, they get up, they do like 30 minutes of music and then he preaches for 2.5 hours.
Yes, he does. And everybody stuck around, too, because he was so engaging.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's his thing. And that's great. You know, so I just went from there.
So let's fast forward a little bit and get to White Cross. How in the world did you guys get together? At what point did you realize this is going to be my career right here, this band?
I can't tell you that story until I tell you the story that and I'll make it really brief that comes before it. So when I was getting ready to graduate from university with my Bachelor of Guitar Performance degree, because because that's what I did. And then there was a rock and roll magazine called Kerrang. And I read in this magazine, David Coverdale has fired both of his guitar players and currently seeking a replacement for Whitesnake. I thought, oh, boy. I said, I felt like Marty McFly in Back to the Future. Like, if I don't do something about this, I will hate myself forever. So I made a cassette tape of myself playing the guitar, and I mailed it to the address on the back of the record. And this is like some kind of made for TV movie, because a month later, my phone rings, and it's the head of A&R at Atlantic Records. He says, you're not going to get the audition. He's got some guy named John Sykes. Yeah, only one of the greatest rock guitar players in the world ever. But he says, are you in a band right now? And I said, no. He said, well, then let's put together a band around you. And I'm like, my hand was shaking so hard, I dropped the phone on the floor. And I thought, oh, boy, here we go. So that led to a couple of years later, my first professional recording was with a secular rock band called Fierce Heart. And over the course of my time with that band, I learned amazing things. First of all, Jim Delahant, who was the A&R guy at Atlantic, he actually was like my coach and mentor. He really taught me how to play rock guitar and blues guitar. He passed away just a few years ago, but I considered him to be the world's foremost authority on blues guitar in the world. He just knew. He was an encyclopedia. He knew everything, and he would send records to me of Albert King, and he would say, learn this riff, and then I want you to play this riff on your song here, and then we get in the studio, and he took apart my guitar playing, and then he put it back together the right way. And we had long conversations that I didn't understand at the time about, this is how you phrase a musical guitar solo so that you have a dialogue with the audience, you feed them a little bit of information, you allow them to digest what they've just heard, and then you feed them the next bite. Like a saxophone player, you have to stop and breathe every now and then. And, I was already listening at that time. I was listening to Van Halen and Yngwie Malmsteen, and I played him Yngwie Malmsteen. He's like, that's too much. It's like, it doesn't work. And it's like, well, it kind of works for me. But I have taken many years to learn these lessons, and I'm still learning them and trying to apply them. So I'm very grateful for my career path. Is very unique. It just doesn't happen typically where something like that. It's not supposed to happen in real life anyways.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll get back to our interview with Rex Carroll in just a moment. But first, I want to talk to all you aspiring podcasters out there. If you're looking for a place to host your podcast, or you don't even know where to start, I encourage you to check out Buzzsprout. That's who we use at buzzsprout.com. They can help you from finding the right equipment at the right price to getting your show listed in every major podcast platform. You'll also get a great-looking podcast website, audio players that you can drop into other websites, detailed analytics to see how many people are listening, and the tools to promote your episodes, plus much more. Hey, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. So join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. You can follow the link in our show notes to get started, and please let Buzzsprout know that we sent you. You'll get a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan, and you'll also help support our show as well. So check out Buzzsprout.com. And now back to our interview with Rex Carroll.
Great mentors and great teachers in all the areas where I needed them. And it also gave me the experience of how to literally just be in a recording studio. You got to understand, and I don't think that you can, and I think people who are listening to this broadcast, they really cannot understand the concept of walking into a recording studio when you've never been in one before. And you're going to make your record, and it's going to be amazing. And it better be amazing, because there's no pressure. You know, they came in the studio every day. Well, we're expecting this to sell about 2 million copies. That's what our manager would say every day. And I was like, oh, no pressure, you know.
Right.
Because nowadays you have a laptop computer and a microphone and GarageBand, and you're in business. You that's your recording studio right there. So every kid today has got a recording studio, and then there's tutorials on YouTube. So, you know, sure. You don't need it. You don't, it's not like a special experience like it used to be, a really big deal to have that experience. So that was huge for me. And then that record had come out, and I was back home teaching guitar lessons at the local music store. And one day Scott Wenzel walks through my door and says, well, I have a rock band, and I can't find a lead guitar player, so I figured I'd bone up on some guitar skills. And I could tell just by listening to the way that he talked, I said, oh boy, if he can sing, this will be amazing. And he says, yeah, I'm the lead singer in my band. And then so then I started pursuing him, and it took a couple of months, because then he got cold feet, but I kept after him because I wanted to track him down, because I had plans and ideas and a vision of all the things I wanted to do, but I didn't have a singer. And, you know, I have a decent voice. I'm okay with like blues music, but I can't really sing the rock music.
Right.
You know, you need an iconic voice like a Scott Wenzel.
Yeah.
And Scotty was, especially in the early days, it was amazing. Just, you know, the things he could do. And he had no limitations on his range. He can sing as high as you want to go. Now, oh, you want to go higher? Fine, you can do it. Oh, you want to have like a harmony part that's like on top of that? Yeah, sure, no problem. and we made demos, and we sent them out, and we got rejection letters from all the Christian labels. And some of them said, this is horrible. And this is trash and this is garbage. And there's no place for this in Christian music. These are like the comments that we actually got back by mail. I think some of them took great pleasure in telling us, you know, this music is terrible.
Yeah.
It was not appreciated. Most people didn't like us, but then like one out of every 10 kids that hears it go, oh my God, this sounds like Rat.
I remember that. Well, I remember everybody thought you sounded just like Rat.
So I thought that was great at that time. I thought, well, that's cool. You know, it's like if it gives people a way that they can sort of relate to the band, if it allows people to make a connection to White Cross by way of comparing it to another band, if it's Rat or whoever, that I thought that was a great thing. So that did not bother me at all. But if you ever talk to Scotty about it, he will tell you that he did not listen to, he basically didn't really listen to a lot of secular music, and he wasn't really familiar with any of the 80s rock bands that I was just a huge fan of. He liked Stryper, and he liked Rez Band, and he listened to like Phil Keaggy and a lot of the Christian music. And then he did, you know, he liked stuff that he would hear on the radio, like Styx and Foreigner and Boston. So he likes a lot of that music, but he had never heard of like Rat or something. That was a little more, well, that's, you know, the fans like that stuff. And sure. it's not getting any radio play. So it's like either you were
so fan. You guys did not purposely model your style after Rat. That was just,
oh no, not at all. That was purely coincidence. And if you listen to Scotty's voice, you know, the resemblances are right. They're a bit uncanny, but yeah, you know, but Scotty's voice, hey, it's truly iconic. You know, it was just a thing. And now there's some dispute about what, you know, who started the band, and I'll just set the record straight. So Scotty had, at that time, Scotty had started a band called White Cross.
Yeah.
Okay? And he had a bass player and he had a drummer, and he didn't have a lead guitar player, and he was playing guitar. So I walked into that situation. However, at that time, it was strictly a cover band, and they were just like, oh, great. Now that you're here, we can learn some Rez Band songs. And this and that.
So you were covering Christian rock? Is that what you guys were doing?
Yeah, that's what it was. That's exactly what it was. And I said, well, I said, this is not my vision at all. I have like big plans, and being a cover band is not even anything that is on my mind. I said, so I'll tell you what. I said, well, we'll play. They had a gig. Some girl was turning 16. At the youth group. So we said, all right, we'll play for the birthday party. So we were all pretty young. We set up in the garage. We had a flash pod hooked up. We tested it beforehand, and then we turned it on at the appropriate moment in the show, and it didn't go off. And then we're all looking at this flash pod, and then boom, it went off and scared the heck out of all of us. But we had a huge knockdown, drag out fight. We had an alley and an alley fight, a street fight. It was a brawl. You know, well, nobody wants to hear your original tunes. We got to play songs that people know if we're going to get any gigs. And you know, that was one side of the argument. And the other side, my side of the argument was, well, that's fine. I'll leave. You guys do your thing, because I need people who share in this vision, because I just felt like, with all due respect to Rez Band, whom I love, but outside of Striper, my feeling was I don't really think there's any other band that's really doing rock music up to the standards that it needs to be. And, you know, at the time, I mean, they the Cornerstone Festival was a thing, right? In those
right.
days.
That was the big one. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, in the original location before they moved down to Bushnell, Illinois, they actually used to have the Cornerstone Festival was like 25, 30 minutes from my house.
Oh, wow.
Right where I lived. So it was literally in my backyard. So we went to the very first one. We was like, hey, look at this, you know, and it was really fun in the early days because it was a smaller event. And it's like, whoa, all of these, they would get like authors and pastors and speakers during the daytime. We go, oh, yeah, let's go hear this guy. He wrote this book. You know, let's go. So we would go and check out like the speakers and the seminars. I thought that was great. I loved that part of it. And then like later in the afternoon, they start with the music. So sometimes we'd go in the morning and check out the speakers, and then we come back later on and check out all the music. So one year, so I had just started working with Scotty, and we were just working on our music casually. Well, not for me. I mean, I was like trying to crack the whip as hard as we could go. But, you know, so then they came out and they go, here's the best in rock music today, kids. And it was a band that I will not say the name of because they're good brothers. But they came out and I was like, oh, come on, this is not rock music. This sucks. You know, this is not it. The rock music is Van Halen, Motley Crue, Whitesnake. You know, where are standards, people? Where are the standards? That was a big thing for me. And not that I can really talk, because when we did our first album, sonically it was a mess. It was horrible. Because, you know, I didn't know how to mix records.
Self-titled.
White I'm talking about the self-titled album. So, you know, so anyway, so we kept working on our music, and then we got signed to the Pure Metal label. They were like, oh, yeah, you can go to the studio. Yeah. It's like we didn't have a producer. We didn't have anything. I was like green. And it was like, well, thankfully for me, at least I had been in a studio. So I had an idea of how it's supposed to go. So as we went along, little by little, I gained experience. So I have been able to eventually get to the point where I'm able to produce White Cross albums and occasionally music for other people too. And I do some of that now. And I had an experience, I'm jumping around a little bit, but I had an experience on one of the albums where I was not happy with the drum sound, with the snare drum specifically. And I made a comment to the engineer. I said, I don't like the snare drum sound. He said, well, what's wrong with it, Rex? I said, well, it sounds kind of boxy. I didn't have the language to communicate successfully. You know, if I would have been able to say, well, you know, it sounds a little, there's a little hump at 600 cycles. And if you could boost the top end at 3.5K, you know, if I had been able to speak about EQ and things like that, I would have had a better chance, but you know, I didn't have the language. So he just looked at me and said, well, that's the way drums sound. And he gave me no breaks. And I was so angry in that moment and frustrated that after that, I immediately went out and I purchased books and VHS videotapes on like how to tune your drum kit, how to mix a drum kit, how to record a drum kit, which microphones should you use, what's the EQ points of the drum kit. So I started learning everything about drums, and I really wanted to learn how music works, you know, how sound gets recorded. Why does the guitar and the voice, you know, they live in kind of the same frequency range. So how do you keep them separated? How do you get them to work together? All these kind of things. So, you know, I've been just a kind of a student of the game. And, you know, anymore now in my later years, I mean, you know, it's like, well, I've already practiced scales for like 4 years. So I still practice my scales, but at the same time, nowadays I'm also interested in, so I'm really interested in songwriting. The songs. At the end of the day, that's what people remember is the songs. And I'm interested in making sure that we have a quality product and a great sounding record and an amazing record, and making sure that everybody does their best work, and that the whole band, we all walk away together like this, feeling like, yeah, okay, everybody did their best work and we have the best songs that we could come up with. And, no, so those kinds of things I'm interested in as far as the music goes. And as a writer, you know, ooh, now I feel the responsibility of got to have lyrics that are, you have to have great lyrics. So, because, you know, we're modeling Christ to the world. So, and they are listening and they're watching and they're listening. And, you know, 200 years from now, once it goes on the internet, it's forever.
Yeah.
It's forever. 200 That's years true. From now, somebody's going to discover this podcast that we're making right now. And somebody's going to hear it. They go, oh, what's this all about? They're going to be checking it out. Because I get messages from people. Yeah. 30 years ago, I was at your concert and I accepted Christ that night. Once you put stuff out there, it takes a while, but it comes back to you.
Make sure you tune in for our next episode where we conclude our interview with Rex Carroll as he talks about his days in White Cross, why he had to have a solo on every album, and why he and Scott Wenzel don't perform together any longer. We'll also preview some brand new music from White Cross as well. That's all coming up next week on Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital. We are a preferred podcast of Way FM and part of the New Release Today podcast network. I am your host, Jason Huddle, and I'd like to extend a special thanks to research assistant Kevin Jewell. Hey, if you like what you hear, don't forget to visit our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. You can become a contributor to the show, even earn some swag. Also, don't forget to check out our Facebook group page, as well as our website at JesusFreaksPodcast.com. Closing out the show, a little more White Cross for you. This is Living in a Lost World.